This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today I have the pleasure of visiting with author Holly L. Springer, who has written her third book titled Waiting for Grace. And I welcome Holly to the program, who is in Pennsylvania in the United States of America. Welcome, Holly, to the program.
Thank you. Welcome, Jay. I appreciate that.
Well, my pleasure. I am looking at your book, and it's described as this on the back. This book walks with its author on the journey to rebuild a life following a brain aneurysm, which had occurred in 2001. So this is your story, correct?
That's correct.
Tell a little of your background and how this happened and what the results were.
Prior to the aneurysm, I was employed by an insurance company as a human resource manager for over 20 years. And the brain aneurysm occurred at work quite suddenly. I had no warning about it. I was very fortunate to be there because they could then, you know, deal with it and take me to the hospital, where they theorized it actually broke either on the way in the ambulance or in the hospital. But anyway, I was flown to another hospital in Philadelphia for the surgery. I was in a coma following the surgery for 7.5 weeks. My family elected to follow the wishes in my living will and pull all the feeding, because the prognosis was, if I'd come out of the coma, that I would be a vegetable. Wow. And could stay that way for up to 20 years, because
wow,
I was 52 years at the time.
Hmm.
So my family did that, called the minister. He came in, said some prayers, and after he left, I woke up.
Wow. That's the term, a miracle, I think, is one way to describe that,
that's
right?
They do call it that, but I would tell you that God and I have had some conversations about this miracle, because as the years have gone off, I've figured out it has come a little bit with strings. But anyway, you know, I equated to, there's a verse in a song that Elvis Presley sang when he's talking to God and said, you know, you've given me a mountain this time. And mm-hmm. So I have to say, yeah, this has been a mountain to deal with all the effects of a brain aneurysm, but it is indeed a miracle that I can even talk about it, which really prompted me to write the books.
Incredible. Your title, Waiting for Grace, I understand there's a Hank involved in this as well. You have
there
a
is.
Hank and a Grace, and what are they? And tell a little about who Hank is and how that fits into the story.
Well, the way to fit into the story is, I am a person who, the one person I'd gone to, the neuropsychologist said, you are one being, but you have two distinct brains.
Right.
Your left side and your right side. And he said, if I would go to a colleague, he said, they would expect to see two distinct people. And he said, you're not. So Hank is a left side, which is virtually unscathed, and has all the attributes of the left side working perfectly, while right side, which was very much damaged, is Grace. And that side of the brain is the one that's a little bit more, I wouldn't say frivolous, but more spontaneous mm-hmm. is a better word.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always waiting for her. Now, on top of that, the aneurysm did some damage to the brain, most noticeably to the cerebellum, which runs across the bottom, which was severely damaged, and pace center and vision. But I'm always feeling I'm waiting for this right side to get in sync with the left side. And so that's why I entitled it that way, Waiting for Grace. But also, I love the name Grace, because grace implies so many things. You know, how you move with grace, a grace of your life. So, but that's why I'm waiting. I'm always waiting for that right side to get in sync with the left side. And some days it's a long, long wait, Jay. That's all I can say.
Right. And Grace, the personality of, not the personality of Grace, but the attributes of Grace, or the right side of the brain, right hemisphere, is you are missing that spontaneity. Did you have that prior to the aneurysm?
I would say I did. And while I have it, probably what I miss most is that right side is maybe, I wouldn't say I've lost it. I would say in some ways it's more pronounced, but I'm always waiting for the spontaneity to catch up with the reasonable side, and it kind of wants to do its own thing. I don't know if I changed too much in personality. I'm sure I did after I had the aneurysm, because
right.
I think any trauma to the brain affects you and affects you differently. But I know my personality changed for a while because my daughter would always have to be apologizing to nurses because I would just slip out and say things. And she said, that's not my mother. That's not how she is. And certainly being in human resources, I had the skills to know not to do certain things. So that caught up. But when I had the aneurysm, I know I had long-term memory. So even though I knew my kids were my children, I had no history with them. Now, all that's come back. And some things will stay with me probably forever as damaged areas. I mean, I can't grow back the brain that's dead.
Right.
But the rest of the brain is trying to compensate for that.
The initial indication that you had something going on at work, what was that, and what would my listeners have found in that situation?
I went into work and I complained about a ferocious headache,
right.
which was, you know, a headache like I never had before. And I must have known somebody was wrong. I cleaned up my office. I went in a coworker and I told her to call an ambulance. I said, something is very wrong. And then I got violently sick. And where I was employed in the office, they had rehab nurses. And my coworker in her office was going to have me put my head between my knees. And one of the nurses came in and said, no, don't do that. We think we know what this is. Just let her lie flat. So that is a big thing. And you read about that. Mm-hmm. Then an aneurysm, one of the symptoms is this ferocious headache. And I never had headaches, never had migraines, which my whole family had to be tested for aneurysms because my daughter has migraines. So they want to make sure that, you know, nobody's going to have something that lies there as it's a little dormant aneurysm. So that was the big thing. And I have to say that was a blessing because had I had that headache to that extreme, I might have caught in work and stayed home. Mm-hmm. I would have passed away because I did die twice that morning. So, I mean, that was a blessing to be where people could come to me and help me.
As someone who is not well-versed in the medical profession, is the aneurysm result or aneurysm symptom, is it similar to a stroke or is it the same thing?
Well, I guess it falls under the stroke after you've had it because they put me with the National Stroke connection,
right.
And I kept saying I had an aneurysm, and I said, well, we kind of put in the same category. And I guess the symptoms, to answer your question, kind of would be like the same, other than I've never had a stroke, and I know that sometimes when you get a clot, you know, you just pass out and you have a part of your body is not going to react the same way.
Right.
And that could have happened because this was on the right side. And oddly enough, they were telling me that the aneurysm happened on the right side, which then would have meant that everything on your left side should have been affected. And they're saying, oddly enough, it's your right side that's weaker than the left side.
Interesting. Interesting. So,
and mine was, they theorized congenital. I had fallen as a child, and they told me that all the arteries in the back of the head were all distorted. And they theorized that when I fell, that the brain protected itself around this area by making other convoluted pathways. And, of course, I never knew I had this until this happened. And I say thank goodness because, you know, when I had my two children, that would have been a very, very advantageous time for a weak artery to burst.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of focus on head injuries right now in sports and other areas.
Yes,
will your book have some validity to a parent who wants to read and find out a little bit about your journey and how maybe to prevent head injuries in their family?
I don't know if I'd say prevent it, but I would say it should give them insight into if they've had a head injury, what living with traumatic brain injury might be like, not so much for them as much as it is for the child and what they're going through. I would say I'm a perfect example of what you see is not what is with me. I mean, I've been told I look normal, that, you know, everything looks fine. internally, I feel like I walk like a demented duck. I have all these other issues. And I would think somebody who has traumatic brain injury is going to be very, very close to that. And they're not going to be express that. But the parents should understand that. That, you know, it's very difficult when you're not walking in that person's shoes. So my books would give you some insight as to perhaps how to relate to the person, not just flew it off, that they don't feel there's something wrong, because indeed they do feel there's something wrong, and that to be understanding about that.
That's a great point. I have a friend who, in his work environment, suffered a head injury maybe 25 years ago, and now is seeing the results or seeing the effect of that. It's starting to hit in his older life.
Right. Well, see, he might even enjoy reading the book, because it's like, my message is don't give up, you know, and you look at life so very differently. But, I mean, there were times, Jay, I was so, so frustrated that I really felt like I could just step off a curb, which I can't do because I can't step off a curb, and walk in front of a truck.
Wow.
And then I thought, well, this would be cute, Holly, because, you know, your walking is more like Tim Conway shuffling as an old man. And by the time you got halfway to the street, the truck would be 3 miles down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I really couldn't do that to somebody. But, I mean, there's a distortion as to thinking there's something you can do. And the reality of it is your body does not perform the same way anymore. And you've got to get used to that. And it probably never will. But, okay, does that mean you're going to stop living? And I vowed early on, I'm not going to be a victim by this. I'm not going to let my life be a victim. There's just too much I feel that I want to do and would like to do to be victimized by my own body and by my own thinking.
Well, your 78 pages, you have included sort of conversations with others as though it were contemporary with the writing of the book. How long did it take you, Holly, to complete the book?
Well, now this one took me, I would have to say, 3 years, only because I kept going back and forth, and I had to be in the mood. And quite frankly, there were days where mentally I just was not in a good place. The other ones were a lot quicker to do, but this one, until I finally put things together and said, you know, Holly, live with it, because, you know, you're getting older and the brain trauma is not going to leave you. So you've got a decision: either sit down and finish this thing and go on with your life, or wrap yourself up in a ball and just throw yourself off the deck. And so I said, you know what, let's just get it done.
The conversational passages, are those, were those actual conversations? Were they remembered conversations? How would you describe those?
You mean the conversations with Hank and Grace?
Well, I think so, yes. You're talking about Grace, and you say, tell me about your travels, Grace. I mean, this is...
Yes. Those are conversations that mentally I have, that, you know, I just sit and can very quietly, have to be quiet, and I can just, you know, there's times when I could just hear that, probably more Hank, because he's around more, that he would just get frustrated and say, oh, my God, you know, where is this Grace at this point? And Holly, you've got to get yourself off that chair. And he's the one that said, you've got to finish this. You know, you started this 3 years ago. Now, just finish it. You've got to do something. And I'm not going to stand here waiting in the back wings until your right side is going flaky back and forth and can't decide what to do. Just get your act together and get it done. So that's Hank.
That's Hank.
And
yep.
That's Hank.
He's
always behind me, pushing me. And Grace is kind of off in La La Land, which is why I can see by the cover she kind of is this busy woman with a smile on her face, because she's off in La La Land thinking, well, now what can we do today that might be fun and interesting? And Hank is back there saying, you know, Grace, just do something.
Well, 78 pages, and you've done a commendable job. What is your hope for the book? This is more than just someone talking to themselves. I mean, it really does have some wonderful insight. How would you describe this to someone?
Well, I think, to me, it's like really apropos to anybody, not just going through an aneurysm or a stroke, any medical issue or any really life issue which completely alters where your path is going, is to say, you know what, read it, and maybe you'll come away with some tidbits of how to rearrange your thinking and your life, and to more important, understand yourself and understand that things will be okay. You know, your life has changed. I know that. I mean, I know there's so many things that alter a person's life. But you've got to learn how to alter yourself with it. I love a certain quote I had. It's really part of a passage, and it really states that you have to learn how to be the master of your fate and the captain of your soul, and that you are your own first, your best advocate. Nobody walks in your shoes. Nobody can walk in your shoes. And I don't think that you can walk in somebody else's either, but you've got to decide where you want to be. Do you want to be sitting on the shelf, or do you want to still be part of life? And I guess I've decided, well, Holly, you can be one of the two, but wouldn't it be much more fun to be part of life while you still have it? Because, you know, my aneurysm taught me, hey, it's not guaranteed tomorrow.
Fabulous.
Tomorrow's never guaranteed for anybody.
Holly, you have written other books. What are the titles? And share that with my listeners.
The first one is called Hello Tomorrow, I'm Still Here. And that's about my journey back from having the aneurysm into the new world I find myself in. My second book is called Negotiating the Speed Bumps, Living with Traumatic Brain Injury. And that is explaining to the reader and to actually to my family what it's like for a person who has traumatic brain injury, what it's like from their end, so that trying to tell them that what you necessarily see in a person isn't what they're experiencing, and hopefully you get an education how to deal with that person.
Oh, that's fabulous. This is an inspirational and insightful read, 78 pages or so, and it's titled Waiting for Grace, my guest author, Holly L. Springer. Holly, my listeners will need to get a copy of this. How do they do so?
Well, I'm sure they can go to Lulu Publishing. I know it's on Amazon, so I would think that they have it almost on every place you can buy books online. I'm sure it's there. You know, since it's self-published, it's not in the library. But I know Lulu Publisher was behind it, and I think if you just put a title search in, you'll find it. But I know it's on Amazon. It's probably on Barnes & Noble. Not long either. I like that. You know, 70-some pages, you can probably read it in a couple hours, and maybe you'll walk away with something you didn't do before or didn't know before, or a new insight into life.
Thank you, Holly, for joining me today and sharing your insight. And again, it's inspirational and insightful. A great read, 78 pages, Waiting for Grace, a clever title. Holly L. Springer, if you want to do a search online and find out about the other things that she has penned, other books she has penned, that would be a great way to connect with her. Thank you, Holly, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Have you heard? The pages of American Patchwork and Quilting magazine come to life on our new weekly online radio show, American Patchwork and Quilting. Join Pat Sloan, our blogging and quilt designer host, as she talks about the latest trends, ideas, and inspirations. Her guests include quilt pattern designers, authors, quilt shop owners, and our editors. All quilters, just like you, call in with your questions. Get quilting tips from industry experts. Learn about free patterns. Hear behind-the-scenes stories from our magazines, American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilt Sampler, and Quilts and More. Get the scoop on free stuff. And find out more about the best independent quilt shops in North America. To listen to a live show, tune in Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Just log on to allpeoplequilt.com/radio. To hear past shows, go to iTunes and search for American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll join us because we know that quilting changes everything.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Autism, The Potential Within. The Play Project approach to helping young children with autism, and the author is Dr. Richard Solomon. And Dr. Solomon joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Lulu. Hello, Doctor.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you with us. This is a, as you call it, a main alternative approach to traditional treatments for autism, and you've got a lot of research, even though for a while there, I'm sure people were scratching their heads and it was kind of out of the box approach, but you have proven that this play project approach works.
That's correct. We actually had a very large federal grant. In fact, our study was the largest study of its kind in the country done for young children with autism. We had over 120 children in our study, and through a randomized control approach, very scientific approach, we actually showed that parents could learn our methods, that the children made major improvements in their development and their autism symptomatology. And what was also interesting is that the parents who did the play project had less stress and less depression, even though we were asking them to put in the time of intensive intervention for their young child with autism.
Well, I've learned from listening to other experts dealing with children that the best way to learn is to play, and in this case it sounds like the best way to treat something that got everyone more than frustrated and overwhelmed at times, especially families, that the play approach is the best way.
Well, it's one of the saddest things for me is to see a parent who can't connect with their own child. And what the play project is fundamentally is a parent coaching model that empowers parents to connect with their child through a play-based approach. And what we found is that in the beginning it's a little bit difficult for parents to play because the children don't want to play. But we coach the parents, support the parents, usually through home visiting. And we can really teach the parents how to engage their hard-to-engage children. And then what's really amazing and why I call the book The Potential Within is because now the child starts to have fun with their parents, and then they start to make developmental gains. And so the parents are thrilled, and then every step of the way, and that's what the second section of the book is about. Every step of progress of potential that the child makes, we change our program to keep challenging the child so that they can reach their full potential. And it is seriously one of the most thrilling things for me is to watch a parent engage their child that didn't want to be engaged and then to see that child make major progress. I mean, I don't know if your listeners realize, but 10 to 15% of children with autism have been shown through research to outgrow their condition. So the potential within, which is the title of the book, the potential within within children who have autism is great.
Your book is a very different format. It's very stimulating because you kind of take us into the office visit or over the phone with the family talking with the doctor. You kind of put together this composite boy, Jacob Grant. He's 2.5 years of age, and then you kind of walk through this these visits and conversations in this intimate dialogue. Why did you choose to do it that way?
Well, this is my life. You know, I mean, I'm a developmental and behavioral pediatrician, so I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a psychologist. I'm actually a pediatrician, and my practice is exactly what the book represents. I see hundreds, probably close to 1,000 now, children with autism. I see them most of the time in my office setting, or I watch videos, you know, from the home visits. And what I did is I represented my day-to-day experience with families in the office setting, and I thought it would be interesting to families to actually be like a fly on the wall and actually experience what office visits are like. I think the other thing, that the way I conceived of the book, is that if you think about an office visit as kind of a little mystery that you have to solve, because every office visit, the parents have concerns, they have questions, they have a little mystery that they want to solve. So each chapter is kind of like a little mystery novel. And each chapter starts with a parent concern, and by the end, hopefully, we've helped the parents And we do it together, and it's done with dialogue. So the book is pretty unique that way, but it is actually my experience in the office setting day in and day out.
Kind of like a reality TV show experience.
No, actually, it's true. You know how you know how on the reality TV shows the characters step back and they comment. Well, I do that. I step back and I comment on what's happening in the office visit, and I give information. And really, it's designed to help parents and professionals who care for these young children with autism to kind of know what to do. You know, it's a very practical book. It's a how-to, and this is what I do every day, is solve problems and talk with families and try and help them to figure out what to do next.
Not only for families, the book is also for professionals like yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. This model that we've developed is a research model. And in fact, you know, we've trained hundreds. Now we have over 300 practicing play consultants in the United States in over 30 different states, so that if families, this is a practical approach that's in the real world. In fact, Ohio uses the Play Project for its early intervention services for children less than 3 years of age as the main treatment for autism in the whole state of Ohio. So this is not only a book, it's based on an actual model that we've implemented all over the country.
In the time we have left, Doctor, let's talk about some of the chapters, some of the treatment that you are advocating, and how to best help these children. I can't imagine, as a parent, I haven't had this kind of challenge. I've had others, like we all do as parents, but
yeah.
To hear that statement, your son or daughter has autism, that is just got to be overwhelming to parents.
Yeah, this is the first section of the book. It deals with diagnosis and the aftermath of diagnosis, the grief that I see all parents, almost all parents, go through, the confusion about what to do, what type of therapies to choose. I mean, how does a parent know what to do if they don't get good guidance from a professional? And what I do in this first section of the book is acknowledge the sadness and deal with the diagnosis, and then, you know, over a series of visits, help the parents to understand what are the possible options for them. And then after that first section, which talks about, you know, speech and language and occupational therapy and school and what I call intensive intervention, and also what therapies not to do. Then the second section of the book really talks, this family, the Grant family, chose to do the Play Project as their intensive intervention. And so the second section is about intensive intervention. And then the third, and we can talk a little bit more about what the Play Project is. But the third section is then about parenting a child who's difficult, because Jacob, it turns out, is kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah. Hmm. Yes.
So that's the third section of the book. Yeah.
A lot of head shaking, and often wonder how in the world are we going to help this child to realize who he is or who she is and their great potential, but at the same time deal with all these behavioral problems.
Well, see, that's to me what's unique about the third section of the book, is that I actually use Jacob's behavior problems to help his development. So it's not just to fix the behavior problem. I see behavioral difficulties of all children, not just children with autism, but I see behavioral difficulties of all children as opportunities to help the children become more mature and to become a better emotional thinker and to be kinder and to be more empathic. And so the third section is really my approach to parenting in general.
This one word, I think, will excite all who are listening. This project, Play Project, is not expensive, but inexpensive. I mean, because there's so much expensive therapy out there.
That's true. The Play Project is very inexpensive relative to what I would call the current traditional approach, which is delivered by therapists. This the reason that the play project is inexpensive is because we're teaching and coaching the parents to put in the time. And we by doing that, you can reduce the cost by tenfold compared to traditional therapies. So that's why it's inexpensive. You know, we're talking in the range of $4,000 to $5,000 a year for the total therapy, and in many states now we're starting to get insurance coverage for it because it is research based. So this is this leads into somewhat of a policy implication. You've got all these children across the country on waiting lists, and you got an approach like this that's a parent implemented model that's inexpensive, very effective. It helps the parents connect to their children, and it's my firm opinion that we really need to get these types of therapies out there for families who are on waiting lists and just don't know what to do for their child.
So how does one start the play project?
Well, right now I would recommend that families go to our website called playproject.org, www.playproject.org, and we actually have a drop-down menu for families where they can see if there's a play project in their community. Over this next year, we're planning on expanding play project services even more all over the country, and this way parents can actually have their own play project consultant come to their home, or they can go to the consultant's office and learn the play project methods, which are largely play-based, developmental, and focused on helping the children form a relationship with their parents, their siblings, and eventually other people like peers. So this is called a developmental and relationship-based approach to helping children with autism really reach their full potential. Because, you know, the main deficit in autism is social deficits, and this is what we target. We target the social deficits.
So help us understand, help parents who are listening to understand, what would that look like? What would they be doing? Or give us some example.
Yeah, well, it's very straightforward. The play project consultant comes to your home, and we use videotape. So we videotape the family in the home. We take 15 minutes of what we call representative videotape, and then we actually give the parents an analysis of the videotape and the home visit with a set of recommendations. Our approach is very structured. It's described in the second section of the book. We have four principles, five methods. We have techniques, we have activities, so it's highly structured, so parents can really do this on their own with the help and support of a monthly home visitor. And then after the consultant comes to the home, they do this videotape, they analyze the videotape and send it to the parents in the middle of the month. And so every 2 weeks you're getting feedback about how to play and how to engage your child. And it's a very effective model and very inexpensive.
Very personalized.
Very personalized and very individualized. And if you go through the second section of the book where Jacob's parents are doing the play project, you see exactly the path that all children, regardless of their severity, all children with autism must walk this path developmentally in order to make the kinds of gains that help them to become truly social and engaging with people. So the second section of the book actually shows what that path looks like. And a parent can pick up the path from wherever their child is and then know what the next step is going to be to make progress and reach their potential.
Well, it sounds like a lot of reassurance for parents, a plan, play with your child. It seems like just it's going to work, and you, of course, have the proof that it is working. So, Dr. Richard Solomon, thank you so much for joining us. His book, Autism, The Potential Within, and it sounded like you had another thought.
No, I just wanted to say thank you so much for reviewing the book, and you know, my other thought was just that I have been witness to hundreds and thousands of children making progress, and so I know what it's like to be a parent and to really wish for that next step, and I've seen it so many times. I really have a lot of faith in the parents and the children.
And give us the website one more time.
Yeah, it's www.playproject.org. And there's a lot of really good information on our website, and you can also purchase the book there and or get it through Lulu.
Thank you so much, Dr. Solomon, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, and thank you for having me here. I really appreciate it.
And this interview has been brought to you by Lulu.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
It's the Fitness Minute with fitness expert Annette Hammond.
When your focus is to lose weight or maintain your present weight, exercising effectively to burn the most calories is crucial. You want to give yourself every advantage to burn as many calories as possible. One good tip is to do your strength training exercises standing up so you can keep your heart rate up. Another tip is to perform multi-joint exercises when you can. For example, as you're doing a forward lunge, add bicep curls while you're coming up from the lunge. Another example is to execute a wide squat, and as you're coming up from the squat, perform a shoulder press. By doing these multi-joint exercises, you're putting more demands on your body, keeping your heart rate up, and working more muscles at the same time. The goal is to burn the most calories during that workout. I'm Annette Hammond. To hear other fitness and weight loss tips, visit our website at AnnetteHammond.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, 4 Minutes a Day, Rock and Roll Your Way to Happy. And joining me is the author of this wonderful book. Joining me from either Texas or Michigan, depending on where she is, I didn't ask, is Chimene Nugent. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Jay.
My pleasure. You have a fascinating story. You were considered a very healthy, in shape personality, a high profile personality in the Detroit area back in the, as I guess, back 80s, 90s. Then something happened to your health that caught you off guard. Share a little of your personal story and why this book got written.
Well, what happened to us was I met my husband. I was in radio myself. I was a traffic reporter at a rock and roll radio station. And we met, fell in love, and got married, which pretty much happened in a very short period of time, in just a couple of months. And we moved into rural Michigan. And I started, after we built the house, I started feeling sick, like having headaches. And I had, at that time, been teaching group fitness classes. And I started feeling like a pain in my chest, like I couldn't breathe and couldn't get enough oxygen into my lungs. And eventually, I discovered that our house that was once featured on MTV Cribs was contaminated with black mold between the walls. Wow. We never saw anything. And we ended up getting sicker and sicker and sicker until I found a few people who pointed me in the right direction. And I was able to help my family and cure my family with alternative remedies like vitamin IV, infrared sauna, and oxygen. And it took a lot longer that way, but we basically had to detoxify our bodies because both Ted and I had 4 different types of mold in our bloodstream.
Wow.
And our son Rocco had severe asthma. So I thought, you know, not only did we lose our home, all of the contents in it, which we demolished the home, that if anybody ever goes to YouTube and Googles MTV Cribs, Ted Nugent's house, that home, that 5,000 square foot home overlooking a beautiful, majestic lake no longer stands.
Wow.
We demolished it, lost all of the contents in it, lost my son's baby pictures, lost a lot of Ted's guitar memorabilia. But worse than that, worse than all of that, is we lost our health.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, how can I turn this story around? How do I make lemonade out of these lemons? And I thought, you know, well, maybe I should write a book. Maybe I should tell my story. Maybe it can help other people. And since I had been in the fitness industry for more than 30 years, teaching everything from step to spinning to slide to kickboxing and even Zumba, I thought, oh, well, I could just tell people how to get in shape and feel great. And, you know, since I'm older now, I could call it 50 is the new 30. Well, I turned 50 and I hadn't written a word. I turned 51, hadn't written anything still. I turned 52 and then I thought, you know, let's kick this into high gear. And one night before I went to bed, I said my prayers and I just asked for guidance. And I said, you know, I want to really help people. I want to share my story with others in hopes of helping so many other people, but also to talk about healthy living and all the things that I've learned in my 52 years to help people feel great. And I went to bed, woke up the next morning, and all I can say is I had this message about the title of the book, which was not 50 is the New 30. It was 4 minutes a day, rock and roll your way to happy. And then I got this message, this divine inspiration about all the little chapters in the book. And again, it wasn't just about getting in shape and feeling great, but also things like spirituality and the spirit of the wild and meditation and being healthy and happy from the inside out. Mm. And I thought, you know, I'm having this conversation with God, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. And then I got the message that I should write the book in 3 days.
I saw that.
So now I'm arguing with God. Who can do anything in 3 days? And I realized, Jay, that day was Good Friday, and something spectacular and miraculous happened in 3 days. And I thought, why not? Why not me? Why can't I write this book in 3 days? And you know what? I did. So
incredible.
4 minutes a day, rock and roll your way to happy is a result of that. It's a result of my 50 some odd years of being in the health and fitness industry, of struggling with life's triumphs and tragedies and turning lemons into lemonade, and also making more money, which is something that all of us could be interested in. I mean, who doesn't want to have a little bit of extra cash? And so in this book, I offered the reader an opportunity to use it as a journal. And we've all had those little things nagging in the back of our mind. Maybe I should be an artist. Maybe I should be a writer. Maybe I should be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
But if you never pick up a guitar, you can't expect to ever get on stage and be a rock star, can you?
No, can't do it.
So I use it as an opportunity for the reader to get in touch with what it is that they really want to do in life. Like, one of the chapters is, if today was your last day, what would you miss out on? What do you wish you could have done with your life? And why not today? Why can't you jumpstart your life? Why can't you do the things you've always wanted to do in life? Why can't you create the life of your dreams? So that's really what my book is about, life, about being happy, being healthy, because you can't be happy unless you're healthy, and creating the life of your dreams.
And your unhealthiness, that unhealthy incident really occurred back in, what, 2000 approximately?
Yes. Yeah, about 2000.
About 2000.
So, yeah, it took me a little while to really get kicked in the butt and start writing this, but once I did, I was unstoppable.
And how long did it take to discover the source of your illness and to get that under control?
You know, that was a couple of years, because it's not like when you break your arm or your leg and you go to the doctor, yep, there's
right.
a fracture in there. So it's not like that. It was little things like I had chronic fatigue. I had debilitating migraines. My son had severe asthma. And I did go to doctors. I went to dozens of doctors who said, you're just working too hard. You're overstressed. Well, do you know who my husband is? Yes. Of course I was stressed.
Absolutely.
But you make excuses for things in life, and I've realized now that you don't have to be unhealthy, that those things that show up as aches and pains and those things that really make you feel bad in life are really red flags that you should address.
And you had been eating so healthily in your lifestyle
yeah.
that you felt like maybe you need to go to McDonald's and change your style of eating.
Yeah. Well, no.
Not
what
exactly.
Was one of the doctors that I visited, and I wrote this in the book, he actually said, hey, maybe I think you're too healthy. Maybe you should really try eating at McDonald's. And I thought, okay, this is not the doctor I need to go to. But, you know, you try everything you can in life. And if there are, again, there's always something that will inevitably bring us to our knees. And I think those are the times when we need to go, okay, God's sending me a message. I need to think about this. I need to dig down deep inside. Like you're gardening. You need to get at the root of the problem and pull out that weed.
You have 60 chapters in your book. It's only 134 pages. Describe for my listeners a little of the style of your writing and the content, how it comes together.
The style of my writing is like we're talking right now, Jay. I mean, that's how I wrote the book. I wanted it to be a conversation.
Right.
Some of the chapters are a little bit longer, and some are meant to be consumed in about 4 minutes, because I didn't want time to be an obstacle for anybody, because, you know, time is an obstacle. Everybody says, oh, I can't go to the gym. I don't have time. I can't start a new career. I don't have time. So I wanted to start with something that's obtainable. And somebody said, well, can you really get in shape in 4 minutes a day? Yes. Let me tell you how. If you've never worked out in your life, let's just say you never have. Let's say you start by walking for 4 minutes a day. Well, 4 minutes, that's nothing. Well, guess what? 4 minutes can turn into 10 or 20 or 30. And this is the impetus to start you on a healthier, happier path.
You have in your book also encouraged people with some very positive observations about change that is good. And then in living life, a life that you've never even imagined is possible. How do you get people on that first step? Besides evaluating where they are physically, there's a mental process to this as well.
Well, I think change comes from within, and we all have those moments in our life, like I said, that brings us to our knees. And sometimes it has to be when we're dark, we're in a deep place. And my son, Rocco, talks about the chapter titled Sadness, because I saw on Instagram a photo of him. He posted a photo of himself crying. And now what mother, what parent wouldn't get upset if they saw that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately called him and I said, are you okay? Because he lives in Los Angeles. And he said, Mom, sadness is a natural emotion. We all see everybody being happy on social media, but you know what? It's okay to be sad. And so Rocco actually wrote that sadness chapter because I loved so much, and he was speaking from the heart and truthfully, because sadness is part of our natural emotion. We shouldn't uncover it. And I think that those are the opportunities for us to go, wow, what or who am I sad about? Because there are people in our lives, correct me if I'm wrong, who when we're near them, we're not very happy campers. So it's an opportunity for us to look at the things that we want to change in our life and make them better. And I'm hoping that someone will look at this book and go, you know what? 4 minutes a day, that's obtainable. That's doable. I'm not down in a deep, dark chasm where I can't get out, but I can do 4 minutes a day. I can do that. So I'm hoping that people will look at this book as an opportunity to inspire and motivate them to change their life and help them live the life of their dreams.
At the end of many of your chapters, you have led the reader into an opportunity to share their feelings, maybe just with themselves or whoever else may read the book, where they can reflect on where they are personally and make some positive steps in the right direction.
Yeah, you know what? I wrote the book that I wanted to read. I've got probably every self-help book on the planet.
Uh-huh.
But there's never been one book that encompasses everything like this one does. There's, you know, healthy living cookbooks or cleaning out your closet and how to get organized and spiritual books and meditation books. But this is a book that encompasses all of those things. So I'm hoping that readers can not only share this with others, but they can really dig down deep inside and use this as a tool to write and journal. And I even have one or two chapters in there where there's a blank page. Because you know what? Sometimes some of us work better when we just draw in color. And as when we were little kids, you draw a picture of your family. Draw a picture of where you want to work. Who do you want to be with? You want to go on a trip? Where do you want to go? So it's a book that encompasses everything, reading, writing, arithmetic, and happiness, sadness, and every emotion within.
You've described your book as a book that would be suitable for anyone up to 80 years of age, maybe even older. And one chapter that kind of is curious, it would be curious for me to see the results of, is Dress Like a Rock Star. How would an 80-year-old dress like a rock star?
Okay, my grandmother is the perfect example of that. My grandmother was 97 years old when she passed away a couple of years ago. And I have a picture of her on, I put it on social media, when she was 95 years old, she walked on stage with my husband, rock and roll musician Ted Nugent. And you know what? I think what happens, and even in my book, I posted a picture of myself at 47 or 48 on stage dancing with my husband. Now, had I not gotten sick, I probably would have been one of those people where, oh no, I'm too old. I can't get up on stage in front of 60,000 people and dance on stage. And I think when you get to be a certain age, and also when you lose your health and you get it back, I think you look at life differently. And for me, it was like, well, I can't dance on stage when I'm 60, so I might as well do it now. And I think for my grandmother and for those people who are older, why not? Why, if you can't live the life of your dreams when you're 88 or 98, when can you? So put that, you know, boa on and fluff up your hair and put your best dress on and go out and dance.
Sounds like a plan to me. I think I'll go home and get my dancing shoes out of the closet. They've got a lot of dust on them, but I think I need to dust them off and get moving.
There you go.
Just for my listeners, a couple of the chapter headings just for your information. The Power of Friendship, Taking Care of Business, Travel, which you advocate greatly in your book, Charity, Go Green, Voice Your Opinion, Social Media, a lot of topics covered, including clean your closet. I think that probably is an important one. Morals and values, the importance of that. Good sleep. Other things that are in here that are inspirational and are covered in a couple of pages, so it's an easy read. Someone can pick this up and cover a chapter a day or recover it or go back through it at any time and find the benefits of what you've expressed. This is a book that should be easy reading, 134 pages. Charmaine, where do we get copies of your book?
You can get this book at BalboaPress.com. It's also available on Amazon.com. And I just really want to express that it is a quick read, and research shows that if you start and commit to changing your habits with 60 days, that's why the book is set up with 60 chapters. Research shows that that's how we can change bad behaviors. And how else can you start but with 4 minutes a day?
Fabulous. Advocate for healthy living, Charmaine Nugent. You've been a group fitness instructor for over 30 years, a motivational speaker, author, and also the spouse of Ted Nugent, rock star. That in itself is a full-time schedule, I'm thinking. I've seen you on morning talk shows and on the networks sharing stories and sharing your life. This is a book that will benefit the reader, so I encourage them to pick a copy of this up. Again, the title, 4 minutes a Day, Rock and Roll Your Way to Happy. Thank you so much for joining me today. Is there a follow-up book in the works?
Oh, yeah. I'm always writing, and I'm working on a screenplay right now. And yes, I there's always something going on. And in fact, I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook often. And I would encourage readers to interact with me. I'd love to hear their thoughts on the book. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and almost every social media. I'm there, and I love to hear about people's stories. So, yes, bring it on.
Bring it on. Thank you for joining me today. Charmaine is spelled S-H-E-M-A-N-E, and, of course, the last
correct
name, Nugent, N-U-G-E-N-T. Charmaine, thank you for joining me today, and look forward to visiting with you and hearing of your success with this wonderful, wonderful book that you've created.
Thank you so much, Jay. I appreciate you taking the time and having me.
Honored to visit with you. For Indie Book Publishing Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.